just not enough.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, virgin olive oil and hypertension, published in the Vascular Pharmacological Journal. Scientists agree that cranberry benefits may extend to the gut, the heart, and the immune system, and your brain, from Tufts University. Also, zinc is essential for proper digestion. Most people are not aware of that. And our nutrient of the day is astragalus. It has anti-aging benefit. Who knew? We knew that astragalus was good for your immune system, especially if you were coming down with a cold or flu. But anti-aging, this is something new. Also today, decreased levels of vitamin B12 increases aging and can impact autism and schizophrenia from Northeastern University. And a lot more on health and healing. And then Dr. Joseph Marcola wrote an article called Worst Fears Coming True as Drug Resistance Gene is Confirmed in the U.S. If you remember about, I'm guesstimating about 3 months ago, I did a report on they have now discovered how to manipulate certain genes in viruses, et cetera, that will, in people, that will have an enormous impact in speeding up the process of the evolution of the gene. That's dangerous because once created, you can't stop it. So now we're going to look at the consequences. Also from our public health segment today, they're now taking a look at the Tamiflu vaccine and saying, quote, it's causing abnormal behavior and hallucinations. Oh, and also, what they don't tell you when you get the live flu mist spray, your body is shedding the flu virus, contaminating everyone and everything around you for weeks, and one guy actually had a contamination coming out of his body from a polio vaccine for a year. Now, that meant that every time he sneezed or coughed or touched his nose, live polio vaccine virus was coming out. Think of how many people got sick because of that. And from Martha Rosenberg from Alternet, after 20 years and many billions of dollars, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, finally admits that opiates are addictive? Gee whiz. Last evening, I walked down to Lincoln Center to see a movie. It was called Indian Point, and many of you have watched Knocking on the Devil's Door, Deadly Nuclear Legacy, on Indian Point and nuclear energy, trying to get us to switch over from nuclear to non-polluting and non-dangerous technologies. In any case, there was a scene in the documentary where it was before Congress, and this man was saying to the head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, a very honest man, by the way, it cost him his job, and here were four of his National Nuclear Regulatory Board members attacking him, saying that he was sexually harassing women and or browbeating them, and he was doing all the wrong things. And he said, no, I didn't do any of this. So the person on the panel said, well, you know what would happen if five people came up here and said that one person like you did something, you know, the outcome of that would be jail, something to that effect. And I was waiting for the documentarian to respond and say, well, here's some B-roll of seven members, seven CEOs, the top most powerful people in the tobacco industry, all lying before Congress. Did any of them go to jail? No. Oh, here's all the members of the top panel at the CDC lying, perjuring about the connection between vaccines and autism. Any of them go to jail? No. Well, how about all the bankers who were there to talk about how they were not involved and were not complicit in the meltdown of our economy because of subprime mortgages? Did any of them go to jail? No. In fact, can you show me any instance where industry's representatives go where they don't lie before Congress, and how many of them have ever been held accountable, including Clapper and others who absolutely lied under oath in Congress? And yet that was how they managed to get this man out. Interesting film, not informative. I'll give you my opinion about it a little later. I was just commenting upon that because suddenly Pfizer is saying, wow, you mean painkillers are addictive? No. OxyContin, addictive? Couldn't be. Methamphetamine? Couldn't be. No, not Ritalin, Dexedrine, addictive to whom? Yeah, you've known it all along, but you put profits above people. That's unfortunate, so we're going to deal with that. Also today, I'm going to have a talk back segment where I'm going to ask you to call in, and this can be anyone, not just millennials. But here's the problem. Millions of millennials are facing buyer's remorse over one important purchase, and it is a purchase, their education. It's $1.3 trillion, but that does not include interest. And boy, does that interest accumulate. Depends upon where they got their loan and under what conditions, but it could easily go to $2 trillion. So here's my question. Should everyone go to college? Undergraduate, graduate, postdoctorate? And if so, why? And who shouldn't choose college first? What are their options? I'll share some of my thoughts where I believe at least half the people going to college at this moment should not. But there are very constructive things you can do that would not indebt you, but prepare you for the world we live in today, because almost every parent in America today, with rare exception, is using the past, their own past, and the recent past as their roadmap, and they don't realize that's all been erased. You've got to factor in who you're competing against. You think you're competing against, you know, your neighbor who went to high school with you? No. No, you're competing against some people who are just going to cream you. All right? They're much more disciplined, not smarter, but much more disciplined, and hence their parents and their society demanded that they study in specific areas. And they are taking virtually all the top jobs. And you're not told about that. You're not told about the visa program. You're not told about how they're virtually destroying all seniority jobs to show that they're making more profit. So historically, the longer you worked in a company and showed your loyalty to it and your expertise helping them, you were a valued asset. Today, you're a liability. Why should we pay you $180,000 plus 6 weeks, 8 weeks of vacation, plus all this extra, when we can hire someone out of South Korea who's got a PhD, you don't even have a master's degree, and they're willing to work for $40,000 and no benefits. And that's what's happening. And the outsourcing of more jobs and the closing down of factories. Just look behind you. From 2000 to 2012, they closed 58,000 factories. Oh, and all those retail stores, they're all dying because of equity partnership buyouts. Leverage buyouts are the kiss of death of our country, and yet we've never held any of these people accountable as being economic genocidalist. That's a term I came up with for all the people, including those sitting on PBS's board, who believe that your company only has value if they can load it with debt and benefit from it. So you're up against a whole lot. Jobs not going to be there. Other people competing from outside the country. And you better know why you're going to college. And you better be looking at only those areas where you can study where there's a chance to have a job. But what about the other options? That's my question to you. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 if you'd like to call in later and give us your opinion about, is college for everyone? Education is. But that doesn't mean you get all your education from college. And is it better to have less debt and learn other skills outside of the college system, or just get on the treadmill like everyone else and go through that little protective environment until one day you're no longer on a college campus and nobody cares how you feel? So your cupcake generation is going to have a big rude awakening. What are the positive options to that? Also today, we must understand corporate power to fight it. Chris Hedges, Truth Dig. And that's where we begin. Also, I'm going to share 60 seconds to put racism in its place. And also, the world collapse explained in 3 minutes. And I think you'll find it interesting. It's funny. And also, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Obama, the Democrats, and Republicans have supported it. Well, what if I told you everything that he has said about this is not true? We'll prove that it's not true. And yet, they're still lining up behind it. Hillary Clinton supports it, and only Jill Stein. Jill Stein is the one that we should be looking at because she is a part of a real revolution, not this phony revolution of Bernie Sanders. So let's begin. Olive oil, especially the organic extra virgin cold-pressed olive oil, is one of the finest oils you can take into your body. You can use it in multiple ways. Generally, I don't suggest you cook with olive oil because it is sensitive to heat, high heat. You should cook with coconut oil, macadamia oil, and mustard seed oil. Those can withstand temperatures over 400 degrees without having their chemistry altered. If you want to use olive oil, use it once you've turned down the heat or turned off the heat. Best to put olive oil on your brown rice, on the beans, on your salad, after something is prepared. Now, why is olive oil so important? Because of the oleic acid, O-L-E-I-C, and it is great because it impacts the antihypertensive quality. So when you consume extra virgin olive oil, I'm suggesting up to about 3 tablespoons a day, you're able to help your cells, your heart, your arteries. And by the way, the oleic acid is a monounsaturated fatty acid, but it also has qualities that will lower your blood pressure. It has phytosterols. It has triterpenic compounds. It has phenolic compounds. All of these are to our betterment. And eating olives are also terrific. In fact, you can get dried olives. They come in little packs. And you can, around 8-9 ounces, but it must have 60 to 70 olives. They've taken the pit out and they've dehydrated them down, and all you have to do is just eat them. So you can take them as snacks with you. And I like to blend the organic, non-genetically engineered soy beans like edamame, which have been dried at low temperature. So it's really a raw food, but it's very high in protein. Just one little serving, what would fit into a tablespoon of soybeans, are about 9 to 12 grams of protein. That's as much as almost 2 eggs. And yet very little calories, and then you eat that at the same time you eat the dried olives. Great way to have a snack during the day. So let's save some lives. Let's take our olives and olive oil and reduce our risk of hypertension. The article was published in the Current Vascular Pharmacology Journal, Volume 14. Scientists also are looking at cranberries. Now, we've always known that cranberries, unsweetened cranberry juice, for example, is terrific for killing bacteria that prevent them from adhering to the cells in your bladder and urethra. So, that's what we knew it did. Well, there's a lot more. According to Tufts University, while decades of cranberry research has found that regular consumption of cranberry products promotes urinary tract health, newer studies show, especially in advances in nutrition, that it impacts your gut microbiota, that's the good bacteria in your gut, your cardiometabolic health, and all these things, including your brain, come from having cranberries. Quote from the study, it has been established that cranberries rank high among the berry fruits that are rich in health-promoting polyphenols. But now, recent investigations have shown that cranberry polyphenols may interact with other bioactive compounds in cranberries that could protect the gut microbiota and provide antioxidant, anti-inflammatory functions that benefit the cardiovascular system, metabolism, and immune function. So, a whole lot more reason to be consuming cranberries. Also, astragalus is our nutrient of the day, and or our food of the day. And astragalus is an herb, and historically, it's been used to boost your immune system. But now we know it also helps your heart, and it protects you against cancer. And it can extend the lifespan. In effect, it can help put the brakes on the aging process. And a common traditional use of astragalus is, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, if you have a cold or flu, it can help your body's immune system protect you, lessening the severity or even having the cold or flu at all. And it's been shown to improve your cardiovascular function in those with heart disease and heart failure. And it stops free radical damage. So it does all these wonderful things, and that's important. And besides protecting against free radical damage, astragalus also inhibits the formation of substances called advanced glycation end products. Now, you've heard me mention, I've said it many times, I'll say it once more for those new listeners. Just imagine that you take a, let's say, a plump chicken, moist, and the skin moves, and you put it in the oven. 2 hours later, you take it out, and it's brown and crisp. That browning, that crispness of the chicken, but also meat of any kind, the barbecuing, the grilling, the if it's deep fried, the same process occurs where you're getting these advanced glycation end products. And that causes the cells in the body to be attacked and die. So anytime you're eating these heavily cooked foods, you're speeding up the aging process. So the benefits of astragalus are important because that advanced glycation end products makes you more susceptible to cancer. And research has shown that astragalus affects cancer signaling pathways and interacts with transcription molecules in order to protect against cancer. And however, what is of special interest to me, because I was studying telomere length and what would cause your telomeres at the end stage of your chromosomes to last longer, and the longer they last, the longer you live. The shorter they last, the shorter you live. It's just that simple. And it's not that complicated what causes it. Exercise lengthens, de-stressing lengthens, juices, healthy juices lengthen, organic food lengthens, concentrated nutrients lengthen the telomeres. Well, now it's found that astragalus can slow the shortening rate of telomeres. That means it's right up there with resveratrol and L-carnosine in helping your chromosomes decrease in length with aging, which means you're going to live longer. So let's add telomere shortening slowdown to astragalus, and hence it's one of our really important herbs, about 100 milligrams a day. And finally, decreased brain levels of B12 increase aging, especially aging of the brain, and also plays a role in autism. And one of the most important nutrients you can give a child with ADD, ADHD, or autism, or any brain dysfunction, is methylated B12, generally at 1 milligram, which is 1,000 micrograms. And also give it at the same time with the same amount of methylated folic acid. And that's very important because many studies indicate a crucial role for the vitamin B12 and folate-dependent enzyme methionine synthesis in the brain development and the function. And so you can help a kid have a healthier brain, even if it's been damaged by anything in development, and so it doesn't have to live a life with that brain defect. And Technical University of Munich says, take your zinc. Why? According to the British Journal of Nutrition, zinc is important in helping enhance digestion. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot to share. In just a moment, I'm going to show you a thought about racism and how we can challenge it in just 60 seconds. And then I'm going to play you a clip about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is they're doing everything possible. Obama wants to pass before he gets out of office. But if it doesn't pass when he gets out of office, I can promise you if Hillary Clinton's elected, that'll be right up on her agenda. And I'll go through the excuses she will use why we need it. And that's always what they do when they're in power. They promise one thing for you to give them the power to be in office, and then they turn around and the people who really have the power, the people finance them, $5 billion for this election cycle. That's obscene. They'll put through the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So we're going to show you the lies about the Trans-Pacific Partnership so you know them and then share those with whoever you can. But first, I want you to hear about racism.
We hate because we're taught to hate. We hate because we're ignorant. We're the product of ignorant people who have been taught an ignorant thing, which is that there are 4 or 5 different races. There are not 4 or 5 different races. There's only one race on the face of the earth, and we're all members of that race, the human race. But we have separated people into racists so that some of us can see ourselves as superior to the others. We thought it would work, I guess. It hasn't worked. It has been bad for everyone. But it's time to get over this business. There is no gene for racism. There's no gene for bigotry. You're not born a bigot. You have to learn to be a bigot. Anything you learn, you can unlearn. It's time to unlearn our bigotry. It's time to get over this thing, and we best get over it pretty soon. I'm an educator, and it is my business as an educator to lead people out of ignorance, the ignorance of thinking that you're better or worse than someone else because of the amount of a pigment in your skin. Pigmentation in your skin has nothing to do with intelligence or with your worth as a human being. It's time to get over this.
Good. Well said. Now, for those of you who are confused about the world of finance and how some corporations seem to fail, but in failing, we, the people who are trying to survive economically and are having trouble, we're being put upon by different banks and lending institutions and payday loans, and then they've privatized being poor to where all of their dirty work is outsourced to companies that will come in and arrest you. They had over 50,000 SWAT raids last year that had nothing to do with anyone being a danger to society. You just didn't pay your bills. And guess who's high up on that list and not paying the bills? Students. The 10 members of the SWAT team broke open a door, guns drawn, to go in because a woman was 6 months late on student loan payments. That's what they're used for? You bet. And so these people, they're bailed out by us. Now, think of that for a moment. We're the ones who are paying usurious interest. On a payday loan, you can pay up to 1,000% interest. So you never pay it off because you're poor to begin with and you need the money just to survive. So you go in and they get you to roll over the loan, but with even more interest each time. You'll never get out of that. And when you can't, they arrest you and put you into a privatized jail system. You pay each day you're in that jail system. You have to see a judge, privatized. You have to pay for that judge. You then have to see a probation officer, privatized. And then they start making sure that everything you own is garnished. Any money in the bank, they get it. They can have all of it. And if you're on Social Security, they can garnish much of it too. So that's the system that affects about 255 million people. Now, could you imagine what would happen and how quickly laws would change about, let's say, criminalizing being poor if you were wealthy and if you were a powerful person? But it's not happening to them. And yet the very people who are causing all these problems are the ones who are being bailed out, as if we couldn't live without them. Let me tell you a reality check here, and especially for the academics listening who think they're smart. And you may be about what you know. But the problem is not what you know. It's about what you don't know. And what you don't know is that we could let every single institution on Wall Street close their doors tomorrow. Every bank, every lending institution, every corporation on Wall Street, and it wouldn't make a dent in the life of the average person. It would enhance our society. Because these parasites and the 17% approximately of the gross domestic product they earn does not filter in. They do not go into small neighborhoods and give microloans at no interest so that small business people can stay alive. They do not support the little business person to bring the rents down instead of having rent bubbles that they benefit from, because who are the landlords getting their money from to speculate on going into the real estate business? The banks on Wall Street. They do not care about the middle Americans who are losing their jobs and their streets are having all these shops closed. They're not helping anyone. They're not giving students interest-free loans. They're not doing anything. This is a completely predatory class of people, and they weren't born this way. They were conditioned to believe that this is how you value yourself, of how you can make yourself feel better and others look at you more enhanced if you're able to beat other people. And when you walk away, you don't look at the consequences of how much money you made at the cost of someone else. So let's get over this idea that we ever again should bail out any of these banks or corporations. We shouldn't. Every one of these corporations should go through structured bankruptcy. Let the greedy-ass stockholders lose everything, because the stockholders don't give a damn about how you make your money. As long as you're making your money, if it's through munitions, cluster bombs, napalm, Agent Orange, DDT, saccharin, cyclamates, they don't care. Make them money, they'll keep your stock. Be ethical, they don't want to buy into your company. Just be realistic about what you're dealing with. That said, if you think it's confusing how they create debt, $26 trillion in corporate debt, not including interest, and how they're able to survive and thrive, and you and I have a hard time making ends meet, and we can't live by that principle, listen to this.
Ever had.
The TPP is opposed by thousands of progressive groups, but it's loved and supported by the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, and the whole corporate lobby.
One could have had a progressive trade agreement which allowed environmental groups or worker groups to sue when they believe that other provisions affecting them were violated. But the only rights for suit were given to corporations.
To top it off, the TPP includes notorious human rights violators. Malaysia, with its horrific human trafficking, modern-day slavery crisis. Brunei, which passed recent legislation for the stoning to death of gays and single mothers. That's who the TPP would knit us closer to.
Ultimately, I would not be putting this forward if I was not absolutely certain that this was going to be good for American workers.
The other countries in TPP are being told that they're going to export more, and their exports are our imports.
Just like the TPP, the last Obama trade agreement with Korea was sold as creating more exports and more jobs. Now, 3 years into that Korea-U.S. free trade agreement, our trade deficit has almost doubled. Exports actually dropped. And the increase in the trade deficit equates to the loss of 90,000 more American jobs.
Critics warned that parts of this deal would undermine American regulation, food safety, worker safety, even financial regulations. They're making this stuff up. This is just not true. No trade agreement's going to force us to change our laws.
We don't have to change our laws, but we will face large penalties if we don't.
Just before Christmas 2015, the Obama administration urged Congress to get rid of our country of origin meat labels. Why? Because the World Trade Organization announced either we had to get rid of this very popular consumer law, or we'd face $1 billion in trade sanctions. And now, TransCanada Corporation is going to one of those NAFTA tribunals to demand $15 billion in compensation from us taxpayers because our government decided that the Keystone XL pipeline was not good for our country or good for the environment.
Trans-Pacific Partnership, everything you've been told by the administration are lies. And that was Lori Wallach for Public Citizens to give you an insight of the truth of it. So just remember, with the exception of Jill Stein, right now, and let us not forget, she is a progressive. She is very educated, and on 45 separate issues, she scored 100% being on this program. And the other, and the second place, by the way, was Gary Johnson. He scored right behind her, but all the rest failed miserably, including Bernie Sanders. So let's be aware, you do have options, and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are not anyone. They're simply shouldn't be considered. Now, from Martha Rosenberg, it's no secret that opiates are addictive when used as a prescription drug, and that is why they were highly restricted until fairly recently. And it's also no secret that there is no evidence of the long-term usefulness of opiates in chronic pain despite unethical pharmaceutical marketing. People think that, okay, I've got a chronic pain, I better keep taking these. You're not being helped. You may think you are, but you're not. Now, Pfizer, the second biggest drug company in the world, has agreed to warn its consumers that taking these drugs can cause 60 deaths a day, every 24 hours. And they must carry the following, quote, opiates carry serious risks of addiction even when used properly. And that's quoting, end quote, not to promote opiates for unapproved off-label use, like for lower back pain, for example. And opiates don't even work after 12 weeks. When they do work, they stop. The disclosures and warnings Pfizer has pledged are not a mea culpa. The city of Chicago sued five opiate makers, Johnson & Johnson, Purdue Pharma, Teva Pharma, Endo Health, but Pfizer was not one of them. Pfizer, which sells one opiate painkiller, was not named in the lawsuit, and there's no admission wrongdoing. Instead, Pfizer is voluntarily drafting an opiate marketing code. But the bottom line is, here are all these painkillers being used, and we're not looking at what causes the pain, and also we are not looking at natural ways of helping to alleviate pain, which is not that difficult to do. But that's not making a profit. The profit comes from using the painkillers, and then you become addicted to them. And if you doubt you can become addicted to a painkiller, why don't you ask the millions of people who've used OxyContin, how was it? How did it impact your life? Were you able to get off of it? Now, as far as the flu, this is from Natural Health, quote, come flu season, antiviral drugs are marketed under the name like Tamiflu, become very popular to treat symptoms of influenza A and influenza B. It has also been recommended to take Tamiflu to prevent the flu after being exposed to it. Mainstream media and conventional medicine love to push vaccine propaganda. Tamiflu is highly recommended to be taken within the first 48 hours of being presented with flu symptoms by the Infectious Disease Society of America and U.S. CDC. But the problem is, it doesn't work. studies are proving that Tamiflu may not be as effective or safe as presented by these large government bodies. In fact, evidence is showing just the opposite because, let's face it, negative effects are responsible for an awful lot of what goes wrong in medicine, and yet you still are told to take the medicine. Tamiflu presents itself with millions of reported side effects, which include long-term neuropsychiatric adverse reactions, and especially among boys 10 to 19 years of age. Nearly 250,000 neuropsychiatric cases from Tamiflu have been reported. In a very large study published in the Biological and Pharmaceutical Bulletin, examined the side effects of Tamiflu and its neuropsychiatric adverse effects, and came down really hard that it can cause, quote, disturbances in conscious deliria, which is delirium, perceptual disturbances, hallucinations, narcolepsy and associated conditions, delusional symptoms, seizures and seizure disorders, anxiety symptoms, tremors, and neurological signs and symptoms like dizziness, and eccrine gland disorders, night sweats, and also abnormal behavior in 36% of the boys who got this. So maybe some of the conditions we're seeing in teenage boys who got the flu shot are due to the flu itself. You don't need the flu vaccine, and it's harmful. If we just ate right, drank right, exercised right, and knew how to take our supplements, there's no reason that you should be concerned about the flu. Also, I want to mention, for those listening to our sister station in New York City, we're heard all over, but I've been there for 40 years. This week, we're going to be preempted for the remainder of the week during Fun Drive. And if people want to continue listening to my show live each day that we broadcast, originate from the Progressive Radio Network, there's a phone number you can call and listen. 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. My hope is that people will continue to support the station, but we have not been on in a long time. And let us hope that the management decides that this audience and my efforts could help the station. But I will be on live every day over the telephone you can hear, over the internet, 712-775-6850. We are in the midst of a great struggle. I'm sure many of you are aware of that. It's about how smart we are in understanding who we're up against, what resources they have to challenge us and stop us, to silence us, to discredit us, and what we should be doing and can be and some are doing to counterbalance that. It was in the winter of 1941, according to Chris Hedges, that a Jewish gravedigger from Kelmo, the western province of Poland, appeared in Warsaw and desperately sought a meeting with Jewish leaders. He told them the Nazis were rounding up Jews, including the old and women and children, and forcing them into what looked like tightly sealed buses. Now, the buses had the exhaust pipes redirected into the cabins. The Jews were killed with carbon monoxide. How did he know? Well, he helped dig the mass graves for thousands of corpses, and then he escaped. Now, on the way to Warsaw, he had gone from village to village, frantically warning the Jews, scores of Jews in the villages and ultimately in Warsaw, about this. And he talked about the horrors. They dismissed it. A handful of listeners, however, including Ziva Lubetkin, who 2 years later would help lead the uprising of by 500 armed Jewish fighters in the Warsaw ghetto, instantly understood the ultimate aims of the Nazi state. Quote, "I don't know how we intuitively shared the same horrible conviction that the total annihilation of all the Jewish communities in Nazi-occupied Europe was at hand in the days of destruction and revolt." That's her book she wrote. Quote, "Well, she and a handful of young activists started planning a revolt. From that moment forward, they existed in a parallel reality." Quote from her. "We walked along the overcrowded streets of the Warsaw ghetto, hundreds of thousands of people pushing and rushing about in fright antagonistic intents, living the illusion that they were fighting for their lives, their meager livelihood, but in reality, when you closed your eyes, you could see they were all dead. End quote. The established Jewish leadership warned the resistance fighters to desist, stop, telling them to work within the parameters set by the Nazi occupiers. The faces of the established Jewish leaders, when they were informed of the plans to fight back, she wrote, quote, grew pale, either from sudden fear or from anger at our audacity. They were furious. They reproached us for irresponsibly sowing the seeds of despair and confusion among the people for our impertinence in thinking of armed resistance, end quote. The greatest problem the underground movement faced, she wrote, was, quote, the false hope, the great illusion. The movement's primary task was to destroy these illusions. Only when the truth was known would widespread resistance be possible. Did any of you see the Republican convention last night? What an embarrassment. A giant room filled with an abundance of sociopath, narcissist, and just bred-dead trolls. The aims of the corporate state are, given the looming collapse of the ecosystem, as deadly, maybe more so, as the acts of mass genocide, the reach and effectiveness of corporate propaganda dwarfs even the huge effort undertaken by Adolf Hitler and Stalin. The layers of deception are sophisticated and effective. News is state propaganda, elaborate spectacles and forms of entertainment, all of which ignore reality or pretend the fiction of liberty and progress just to distract us. Education is indoctrination. Intellectuals, along with technocrats and specialists who are obedient to neoliberal and imperial state doctrine, use their academic credentials and erudition to deceive the public, to create the next batch of sheep. The promises made by the corporate state and its political leaders, what do they say? Didn't you hear it last night? We will restore your jobs. We will protect your privacy and civil liberties. We will rebuild the nation's infrastructure. We will save the environment. We will prevent you from being exploited by banks and predatory corporations. We will make you safe. We will provide a future for your children. Just the opposite of reality. They lie with a smile and charm. The loss of privacy, the constant monitoring of every human being, the use of militarized police to carry out indiscriminate acts of lethal violence, a daily reality in marginal communities, and the relentless drive to plunge as much as two-thirds of the country into poverty to enrich a tiny corporate elite, along with the psychosis of permanent war, presage a dystopia that will be as severe as the totalitarian system that sent tens of millions to their deaths during the reigns of fascism and communism. There's no more will to reform or to accommodate the needs and rights of the citizens by the corporate state than there was to accommodate the needs and rights of Jews in Nazi-occupied Poland. But until the last moment, this reality will be hidden behind the empty rhetoric of democracy and reform. Bernie Sanders is helping lead that false reform. He is a corporatist disguised as a true socialist. Repressive regimes gradually institute harsher and harsher forms of control while denying their intentions. By the time a captive population grasps what is happening, it's too late. The elaborate ruses set up by the Nazis that kept Jews and others slated for extermination passive until they reached the doors of the gas chambers, usually decorated with a large Star of David, were legend. Those taken to death camps were told they were going to work. Unloading ramps at Treblinka were made to look like a train station, with fabricated train schedules posted on the walls and fake train clocks and ticket windows. Camp musicians played. The elderly and infirm were escorted from the cattle cars to a building with Red Cross symbols on it. It was called the infirmary, before being shot in the back of the head. Men, women, and children who would die in the gas chambers within an hour were given tickets for their clothes and valuables. Quote, the Germans were quite courteous when they led people to the slaughter, said Liebtgen. Jews in ghettos awaiting deportation to the death camps were divided by those who worked for the Nazis and therefore had certain privileges and those who did not. This division effectively pitted two groups against each other until the final deportations, in which all were killed. And collaborating with the killers, in the vain hope that they would be spared, were Jews themselves, organized into Jewish councils and formed into units of the Jewish police, along with what Liebtgen called, quote, their cronies, the speculators, the profiteers, and the smugglers. In the death camps, Jews, to stay alive a little longer, worked in the crematoriums. But in the end, they would all go in the crematoriums. Our corporate masters know what is coming. They know that as the ecosystem breaks down, as it is, as financial dislocations create new local financial meltdowns, as is happening, as natural resources are poisoned or exhausted, despair will give way to panic and rage. They know coastal cities will be covered by rising sea levels and crop yields will plummet. Soaring temperatures will make whole parts of the globe uninhabitable. The oceans become dead zones. Hundreds of millions of people will become refugees and will flee in desperation with nowhere to go and no help when they get there. And complex structures of governance and organization will break down. They know that the legitimacy of corporate power and neoliberalism, as potent and utopian an ideology as fascism and communism, will crumble. The goal is to keep everyone fooled and demobilized as long as possible. The corporate state operating a system, Sheldon Wolin referred to as inverted totalitarianism, invests tremendous sums, $5 billion in this current presidential election alone, to ensure we do not see its intentions or our ultimate predicament. These systems of propaganda play on our emotions and desires. They make us confuse how we are made to feel with knowledge. They get us so identified with the manufactured personality of a political candidate that we no longer want to see the reality of who we voted for. Millions wept at the death of Joseph Stalin, including many who had been imprisoned in his gulags. There's a powerful yearning to believe in the paternal nature of despotic power. There are cracks in the edifice. The loss of faith in neoliberalism has been a driving force in the insurgencies that we're seeing. It's time to step outside the establishment. This means organizing groups, including political parties, that are independent of the corporate political machines that control the Republican and Democrats. It means carrying out acts of sustained civil disobedience. It means disruption. Our resistance must be nonviolent. That's how we have to start. But when you no longer buy their hamburgers and hot dogs, that's an act of civil disobedience. When you no longer go to their mega churches so that one of the pastors can fly in a $65 million private jet so he can pray closer to God, then you're taking back your power to seek true spiritual authentic relationships. When you no longer go into their box stores, when you no longer eat their genetically modified food, when you no longer bank and use their credit cards, where Samuel Jackson says in his own very good acting way, what's in your wallet, you're going to get 1.5% back on every single purchase every day. Yes, you will, but you're giving them 18% to begin with. You give them 18%, they give you back 1.5%. 18 to them, 1.5 to you. How is that a good deal, Samuel? Or is it just another paycheck? And that's how they operate. So don't think that you have to run out and into a parade of demonstrators to make a point. In fact, frequently better than that, because I've seen a lot of people in protest, including Occupy movement, that was a farce. but no one wanted to talk about, a group of millennials who didn't want any adults in the room. The people from the civil rights movement, from the feminist movement, from the human rights movement were, for all intents and purposes, their knowledge, cumulative knowledge, was excluded. And when I challenge people and watch it on, what are you against? Corporatization. I am too. How strongly are you against it? Completely. That's why we're here. You're wearing their clothes, their sneakers, their hat, their shirt. Your credit cards are from their banks. The food you're eating, that McDonald's and that cola. Which corporate interests are you really against then? So you embrace an ideology, but you're not willing to be an example of it? My goodness, how foolish we've been. Be that nonviolent activist. Lead a healthy, honorable, moral, ethical life, and that will make an enormous difference. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with Talk Back on how do you see the educational system working for or against the millennials and other people who are going to college, and what other options would they have in order to be educated, to have a better chance of a job without the debt peonage that goes with it. 888-874-4888, back in a moment. James from Queens, your turn.
Oh, good afternoon, Gary.
Hi.
Gary, I just wanted to, you know, you made a very good point there about schools. And a lot of students, especially in the middle school, don't really know what's going on because a lot of the schools have gotten rid of the shop programs they had years ago when I grew up, where you learn about carpentry or any other skill would prepare you. Now, that's been eliminated. So a lot of these young people are sort of put on a click to go to college, and college does not solve all the problems because a lot of students that cry out for taking these exams, even that exam, the SATs and all that, are owned by a corporation that really doesn't care about how they set up the exam, but it's all money, making money. And I say, you know, how can a student afford to even get an education? And then a lot of these students are hooked into the sport and rain thing where all these kids want to become basketball players and football players for the school, but yet the coach makes more than a PhD in the MIT engineering. And these guys don't have no degrees in sports. And I know that the fact that a lot of these young people don't find any jobs because those skill jobs, by using your head and your mind, are replaced by a robot. So, Gary, I think we have to rethink our understanding of what it means to learn anymore.
That's why I'm asking for your input, James. Thank you. I appreciate it. Ted from New Jersey, your thoughts, please.
Yes. Good morning.
Hi, Ted. Share your thoughts with us, please. He's off. Brian from New Jersey. Go ahead, Brian. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I think there's many other options besides college, and we shouldn't be sentenced to having to go to college. Trades, options, crafts, as a carpenter or electrician can easily make $50,000 a year, and it can go up from there. And the one opportunity that's most underutilized is entrepreneurship. And then we're not as bound. There's many more options. It's, you have more independence, and that's something that should be much more considered. But with in mind that no matter what you go into, whether it's college or a trade, that we shouldn't be just specializing in one thing that we should be always learning for the rest of our lives and maybe have multiple skills. So if one doesn't work out, we can do another. And because specialization is more for, like, insects. We're a superior species, and we should be able to...
Well said. One last call. Edward, your turn.
In education, if you have a son, take him out of the public schools immediately. Start your own home school. Educate yourself. Be a reader. Get the American Free Press and the Barnes Review and learn about real history for the first time. Learn the truth that government is the name of a criminal activity. Learn the truth about the origins of war, especially World War II.
Edward, thank you. Let me finish off with some quick suggestions. The best jobs for the future with a degree would be in software development, elementary school teachers, nurse practitioners, vocational nurses, attorneys, health service managers, market research analysts, physical therapists, information systems managers, accountants, physicians and surgeons, computer systems analysts. And the careers you can get outside of college would be electricians, plumbers, transportation managers, detectives, commercial pilots, solar power installers, farmers and ranchers, homesteaders, transportation inspectors, postmasters, purchasing agents, multimedia artists, web developers, dental hygienists, and, of course, entrepreneurs. People have their own businesses. So there are options. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.